All right. I don't have my coffee cup. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Friday, everybody. Today is Thursday, September 11th, 2025. And I just looked down and realized I don't have my coffee cup here. I'm just like totally thrown off my game right now. But this is a live show. There's no do-over, so we must press on. Happy Inflation Day, everybody. We got CPI today. We got jobless claims today. Some interesting numbers came out. But unfortunately, we have some elephants in the room. One big one that's got to be addressed. We're going to talk about it. Just so you guys know, I had to have a talk with my moderator this morning. Look, guys, calls for violence will be summarily deleted from the comments section on this live stream and from this channel at any and all times. Just letting you guys know that. If you want to go talk about doing violent shit, go to somebody else's channel with that noise. We don't want it here. I want to read you guys a quote here. When people stop talking, that's when you get violence. That's when civil war happens. Because you start to think the other side is so evil that they lose their humanity. That was Charlie Kirk, who was murdered yesterday because he was talking at a college campus. He was saying things that make people uncomfortable. Charlie Kirk said a lot of things. Said a lot of things I agree with. He said a lot of things I disagree with. But Charlie Kirk was inherently nonviolent. And a lot of people are trying to say, oh, Charlie Kirk got what was coming for him because he said things that I don't like. Remember that part about how when you stop talking, the other side becomes so evil that they lose their humanity? A lot of people are trying to morally equivocate what happened to Charlie Kirk by dehumanizing him, by just throwing this blanket of racism or hate over things he said. Charlie Kirk did not say racist, hateful things. He said things that made people uncomfortable. And they just knee-jerk reaction said, oh, that's racist. And then automatically he becomes less of a human being. And well, if violence is done upon him, well, then that's just what happens to racists. That needs to stop. We need to talk. We are dangerously close, guys. Political violence is becoming too freaking normal in this country. Multiple assassination attempts. Regular assaults at political rallies. Oh, that's just something that happens every day now. It's not supposed to be like this. And I can tell you the wackos on the right, they are locked and loaded. They are ready to rock. They need to calm down. You need to stop poking that bear, guys. So look, Charlie Kirk did not want violence. Charlie Kirk wanted people to talk. And so if you're out there advocating for a violent reaction to what happened to Charlie Kirk, you are dishonoring his memory. And that's about all I got to say about that. I could go on for hours and hours about that, but I'm going to stop. I'm pissed. But I am not ready to do violence over it. And again, guys, keep it calm. That's all I can tell you. All right, let's go on, shall we? Inflation, the thing just happened. CPI, it came in largely in line with expectations, but higher than last month. And there's some interesting things hiding in the inflation, to be honest with you. When you look at the categories where it is, there's a couple of things come to mind. Number one, data centers come to mind. Number two, tariffs. And number three, the crackdown on immigration. You can see these things showing up in certain places in the inflation report today. And it's pretty interesting, guys. We have got the inflation. And oh, by the way, initial jobless claims came in higher than expected. We've got the stag also. Neither are at levels that are particularly alarming, but both are trending in the wrong direction here. We are not headed to a good place economically. Let's talk about the numbers. 2.9% year over year headline. That is in line with expectations and up slightly from 2.7% last month. Inflation moving in the wrong direction. Remember that 2% target? Remember it was going to be transitory and don't worry, you know, we might run a little hot and then we'll go right back to 2%. How many dozens of months has it been since we hit 2%? I don't know, but there's one more. Month over month, inflation ticked up a little bit to 0.4% versus 3.3% expected and up from 0.2%. Core inflation was pretty interesting. Core inflation came in line with expectations and unchanged from a month ago. So all the inflation was in food and energy, or all the changes in inflation, I should say, were in food and energy. That's pretty interesting. And again, we'll show you the categories there. Gigi just bought my coffee in. Thank you. All right, now we can do this right. Thank you, Gigi. I got my coffee mug. We're back. All right, we're so back. All right, now let's see what else is going on here. Initial jobless claims, big spike. 263,000 people filed for initial unemployment claims last week. That is up from 236,000 the week before that. Now, we've talked about the jobless claims a couple of times. We mentioned this almost every week here. And I've been saying, you know, hey, the buildup in continuing claims is a little bit alarming, but at least we're not seeing a spike in layoffs. At least we're not seeing the surge in initial claims. Well, you can crumple that up and throw it out the window because we just got about a 30,000 spike in initial jobless claims. I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure where they came from. I didn't see any big headlines about tens of thousands of layoffs from anywhere. There was a strike going on at Boeing. It's the Boeing defense segment. Maybe that's affecting things. By the way, that strike is over this morning. But look, when you got initial jobless claims, the job market, the employment situation, unemployment, all trending in the wrong direction. At the same time, inflation is going the other way. This is starting to look a lot like the 1970s. And remember in the 1970s through the early 80s, there was three distinct waves of inflation. Or if we're repeating the 70s, that would mean we have two more waves of inflation and they get progressively worse as we go. Oh, I really hope we're not repeating the 1970s, but it sure as heck looks like we are. We also got some interesting news yesterday in the business world. We all watched what happened with Oracle stock yesterday. Larry Ellison, he's like right there about to pass Elon Musk, or maybe he passed Elon Musk as the richest man in the world because Oracle stock went on an obscene run yesterday off of an earnings and revenue miss. Oracle signed a $300 billion cloud deal with OpenAI from 2027 through 2030. Am I the only one here who's like, hey, OpenAI doesn't have $300 billion. Does that even matter? Oh, we signed a deal. It's as good as money in the bank. Like, hey, I'm going to sell $300 billion worth of Girl Scout cookies to my neighbor next month. Oh, my neighbor doesn't have $300 billion, but never mind that little detail. It's as good as money in the bank. It's a remaining performance obligation? Yeah, it's future revenue. Start trading off of that. That's what Oracle is doing here. Look at some of the numbers for OpenAI, guys. Last year, OpenAI lost $5 billion on $3.7 billion in revenue. Where's that company going to get $300 billion from? By the way, according to the information last week, OpenAI increased their projected cash burn from $35 billion through 2029 up to $115 billion. Cash burn, that is negative cash flow. So you can throw $300 billion for this Oracle contract on top of that. Where is this magic money going to come from? Does anybody care that this money doesn't exist? Nope, they don't. Just buy the stock. This is the dumbest, this data center bubble. It's getting to such ridiculous proportions. This whole accounting fraud and ridiculous hype machine. Guys, the books that are going to be written about this period in history are going to be legendary. The movies are going to be hilarious. We're going to need Sydney Sweeney in a bathtub to explain what they're doing. Sign me up, by the way. Anyways, it's getting more ridiculous. So is the crypto thing getting more ridiculous. And it just keeps on going. We got Klarna IPO'd yesterday. That's the second biggest of the buy now, pay later firms. It was something of a lackluster IPO. The stock did rip about 14.5% from its IPO price, but it closed the day well below its opening price. And considering some of the other IPOs that we've seen in recent weeks, it was really something of a dud, even though the stock is a little bit higher. And I just got to tell you guys, I put out a video yesterday about Tricolor Auto Group and their bankruptcy and the fraud that's going on there. Be very careful of anybody who is out there rubber stamping loans, claiming they have some kind of proprietary AI or algorithm that's even better than the credit bureaus. We just had one of them go bankrupt in spectacular fashion, and I suspect they won't be the last. And Klarna is among that list. Klarna claims that their proprietary data is better than running people's credit scores before we make loans to them. I think history will prove that claim incorrect. We also got Open Door stock is up 32%. They got a new CEO, Kaz Nagjasian. That's the former COO of Shopify, is now taking over things at Open Door. Stock's up 32%. It's like a $6.5 billion company now. And I'm just sitting here. I'm like, yo, they flip houses, dude. They don't make money, dude. The billions of dollars in debt, dude, and they flip houses, and we're in a housing bubble. Okay. Good luck with that. It's a short squeeze. It's a meme stock. It's not a real business. Opendoor is going down in flames spectacularly. It's no telling how high the stock could go before that happens, though. Because see also Oracle. See also 8Co Holdings and the WorldCoin Holding Company. It doesn't really matter if companies make money anymore, according to their stocks. That's pretty much the message from this market, which is one of the reasons why I don't trade stocks very much anymore. Because there's no price discovery. Nobody cares. The valuations, the earnings don't matter. Number go up. We've also got Turkey is cutting interest rates more than expected, despite the smothering of its people by inflation. Inflation remains 33% in Turkey, and they're cutting rates. Yep, that's true. That happened. The Indian rupee is bleeding out over tariffs. And another story about private assets. This time we have this wonderful article from Apollo, who says adding private assets to your 60-40 401k can help with volatility. I'm going to talk all about why that is BS and all about why Apollo, a company that is one of the outfits that's trying to exit these private asset positions, might be so eager to sell it to you. Interesting. Maybe they're taking the other side of the trade there. Guys, we got a lot to talk about this morning. How about we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in this market. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm. If you're new here, come on back tomorrow. Have your coffee with the melon heads as we go through markets. And right now we've got stocks are modestly positive here, up about 15 points or 0.23% higher for the S&P 500. Initially, a little bit of volatility on that CPI reading. Then stocks went positive. People were like, "Oh, you know, CPI, it went higher, probably, though, not enough to discourage the Fed from cutting rates in September." Then they're like, "Oh, wait, that initial jobless claims number, that was pretty bad. Maybe we're actually going to get 50 basis points because the job market keeps getting worse." And now stocks are just kind of right back to where they were, kind of like a nothing burger, guys. Nothing has really changed. Looking over at the Dow, we got the Dow is higher by about 111 points, 0.24% higher. And the NASDAQ is higher by 0.3% or 70 points to the upside. So stocks are up across the board this morning. The U.S. dollar, meanwhile, is a little bit weaker, down 18 basis points, 97.67. And I have to say, when I see the dollar weakening steadily like this, maybe that is the possibility of a 50 basis point rate cut creeping in to Forex traders' expectations. I don't think we're going to get 50, though. I think for political reasons, if the Fed cuts 50 here, they will be largely seen as bending over backwards for President Trump. And I don't think they want that message getting out. So I do think 25 basis points is still by far the most likely outcome here. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are lower almost across the board. The 30-year yield is down a fraction of 1.4.674. The 10-year also down a fraction of a point at 4.02. By the way, before that CPI report, yields had been a little bit higher. They reversed on that reading. The 2-year is at 3.513. That's down 2 basis points. And the 1-month is actually up a half a point here at 4.151. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got gold is in the red this morning. Spot gold down $16 and about, we'll say $16. It's a little volatile right now, 0.4% lower. At $3,625 for spot gold. Silver is a little interesting this morning. We've got the spot prices down about a dime or a quarter of a percent, $41.04. However, we've got that December, the front month contract is at $41.68. That's actually up 8 cents or 0.2%. So we're still seeing a divergence between the London spot price and the New York futures price. New York is still trading at a premium. People are still a little bit worried about tariffs showing up on silver. That's still playing out here. We're still seeing that metal flow from London into New York. By the way, I like the shiny. Copper is lower by 0.14% this morning. Platinum is down about a quarter of a percent. Palladium is up almost a half a percent. And crude oil is down by about 1.8%, 62.53 for October WTI futures. Looking over at the Bitcoin market, we've got $113,500 as priced on Coinbase, down about $500 from this time yesterday. Interestingly, yesterday we talked about the rally in Bitcoin prices that we were seeing, and we pointed out to watch that 50-day moving average, that was a key resistance level. And we went right up to that level and stopped and then reversed lower. How about that? So keep an eye on that 50-day line, guys. Right now, the 50-day moving average is about $114,500. That is the resistance level. A break above that would indicate Bitcoin has a chance of making at least one more all-time high before the onset of crypto winter, which could happen pretty much any day now. All right, let's talk about what's going on with the inflation rate. Here's your headline number, the year-over-year change in CPI. It came in at 2.9% year-over-year, up from 2.7%. And again, roughly in line with expectations. Now, look, guys, we had inflation has now, since April, gone from 2.3% up to 2.9%. And what happened in April? Well, that was Liberation Day. Now, you know, yeah, the tariffs, they took a little while to go into effect and they were on again, off again, and all the trade negotiations. But all that being said, it's kind of hard to argue that at least something of the tariffs is bleeding through into consumer prices right now, as we have now seen a pretty consistent move higher ever since those tariffs were announced. Now, on a month-over-month basis, we had 0.4% inflation in the headline number. That is a little bit higher than the 0.3% that was expected. That's really the only number that came in higher than expected, was that month-over-month number, and up sharply from 0.2% in the prior month. Looking over at core inflation, which strips out volatile food and energy, we are unchanged at 3.1%, which is exactly what the market was expecting. So no surprises from core inflation on a year-over-year basis. Same thing with a month-over-month basis. Core inflation, 0.3%, in line with expectations and exactly where we were a month ago. Now, let's look at some of the categories here. Actually, you know what? Let's skip over this chart and let's look at Charlie Bilello's tweet here. This was Charlie put out a pretty good tweet. Let's look at this one. He's talking about the big changes from a year ago in the August CPI report. Now, this is pretty interesting, Charlie. Very good post, by the way. Look at the first two, the two big ones here. Gas utilities up 13.8% year over year and electricity up 6.2%. And if you're sitting here wondering what's going on there, guys, that is power getting more expensive because of the ridiculous build out of data centers. Our utility bills are going higher because big tech is hogging all the power to run their stupid chatbots that tell us to put glue on our pizzas. You can see it in the inflation numbers. How about big tech builds their own damn power plants from now on instead of taking ours to run their stupid science experiment? Also, we've got used cars higher by 6%. That's most likely the result of tariffs here. All right, tariffs are driving new cars a little bit higher. They're down there at the bottom, 0.7%. And new cars are just outright unaffordable. And so more people are being driven into the used car market, driving the price for used cars higher. Now, that's kind of interesting because we're also seeing a big spike in repossessions in the auto market because a lot of people aren't paying their bills. See also that video I did about Tricolor Auto and the fraud that was going on there and the banks that are stuck holding the bag. But car prices continue to contribute to the inflation here. That's arguably tariffs are driving that. Medical care higher by 4.2% because that's all medical care ever does is get more expensive. Food away from home up 3.9%. We saw food got more expensive on both fronts. Food at home 2.7%. Food away from home higher by 3.9%. All right, so I think tariffs are playing a role there. We do import a lot of fruits and vegetables. And I also think the immigration crackdown is showing up in that food away from home number. Restaurants have a lot of labor costs and labor is getting more expensive because of inflation, but also because of shrinking labor supply. A lot of people are being deported and a lot of people are leaving or not coming to the country because of the crackdown on immigration. And that's going to hit places like restaurants and hotels. By the way, not shown on this chart, there was a big spike in shelter away from home, otherwise known as hotels. That was higher by 2.5% this month. And the hotel business isn't exactly thriving. It's not like people are traveling more. It's actually the opposite. People are traveling less. And yet hotels are getting more expensive. Why would that happen? Arguably because their labor costs are going up, probably because a lot of cheap labor is being deported. And that's starting to show up in hotels as well. It's just a reminder, guys, the crackdown on immigration, it's very much a protectionist policy, much the same way tariffs are a protectionist policy that will put upward pressure on some prices. Be ready to pay for it. Let's see. We've also got the shelter index higher by 3.6%. The biggest contributor there is rent, but hotels also contributed to that. Transportation up 3.5%. That's airfares. That's your insurance costs going up. And what else? We did have some costs went down. Fuel, oil, and gasoline, the two energy sources that are not used to generate electricity at all, they actually got a little bit cheaper. That's the one silver lining to this report. All right. Also, we got to talk about initial jobless claims, guys. These are weekly snapshots, and you can see here we had a big spike here. There is the stag. We just talked about deflation. Here's your stag, 263,000 initial jobless claims for the week ending September 6th. That is a big spike from the 236,000 that we saw last week. And if we zoom out on the chart, guys, we look at a three-year chart. That 263,000 initial jobless claims, that is the highest number we have seen in more than 3 years. It's actually the highest number we've seen since the downslope of the pandemic. Of course, when you zoom out on a five-year chart, you can see how that spike just kind of disappears compared to the jobless claims that were reported during COVID. So look, jobless claims are rising. They're going in the wrong direction, but they're still a far cry from the alarming levels that we saw at the beginning of this decade. But again, guys, they're going in the wrong direction, even though inflation is going higher. The Keynesians tell us that shouldn't happen. The Keynesians tell us you can't have high inflation and unemployment at the same time, even though the 1970s did in fact happen. We still haven't really explained that one away. Now, the one silver lining here is continuing jobless claims did not rise. Now, this is for the week ended August 30th here. Let me refresh that, make sure this is the most accurate point. All right, so it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. The spike in initial claims was for the week ended September 6th. This is for the week ended August 30th. No corresponding increase in continuing claims. So those people who lost their jobs last week, we'll see if that filters through to a big spike in continuing claims next week, as I expect it will, because the job market pretty much sucks. Ask anybody who's out there looking for work. It is not an easy market to find a job in. All right, then we got to talk about this one from yesterday in the Wall Street Journal. Oracle and OpenAI sign a $300 billion cloud deal. Welcome to the AI mania, where the numbers are totally made up and the dollars don't mean anything. The majority of new revenue revealed by Oracle will come from an OpenAI deal, the sources say. OpenAI signed a contract with Oracle to purchase $300 billion in computing power over roughly 5 years, people familiar with the matter said, a massive commitment that far outstrips the startup's current revenue. That is a mild understatement. The current annualized revenue, which is like if you take the last month's revenue and you multiply it by 12 months, you get about $10 billion. And by the way, that is revenue. That is not profit, just revenue. They also have to pay power prices. They also have to pay labor, everything else. $300 billion over 5 years. Yeah, that's only about 600% of their current revenue. Where are they going to get the money from? Oh, silly rabbit. Don't ask questions. Just buy stock. The deal is one of the largest cloud contracts ever signed, reflecting how spending on AI data centers is hitting new highs despite mounting concerns over a potential bubble. What's with the word potential there? Is anyone even pretending this isn't a bubble anymore? And since nobody's really pretending this isn't a bubble anymore, we're just all saying it's not going to pop yet and go ahead and buy the stock, which means they intend to let somebody else be left holding the bag when that bubble does burst. But I digress. The OpenAI and Oracle contract, which starts in 2027, is a risky gamble for both companies. OpenAI is a money-losing startup that disclosed in June it was generating roughly $10 billion in annual revenue. That is less than one-fifth, actually it's one-sixth if my calculations are correct, of the $60 billion that it will have to pay on average every year. Oracle is concentrating a large chunk of its future revenue on one customer and will likely have to take on debt to buy the AI chips needed to power the data centers. In other words, it's all hype and it's never going to happen. But you know what? You'll never be able to convince Oracle shareholders of that. Look at what that stock did yesterday. It rallied 36% in one day. Guys, this is a $922 billion company that just rallied 30% in a day. It's trading like a freaking penny stock. And it's up another percent and a quarter ahead of the opening bell, $332.70, up another $5 this morning. Good luck with that one. Meanwhile, we got Klarna stock loses some steam in their post-IPO debut as traders gain access to fresh play on fintech. Look, guys, we're going to skip over this one. We'll just look at the stock. Klarna, it's a buy now, pay later company. They delayed their IPO a couple times. They finally IPO'd yesterday. The stock was up 14.5% from its IPO price, but it also opened and rallied to about $57 before bleeding away most of those gains. So compared to like the Figma IPO that happened earlier this year, it was kind of a lackluster event for Klarna. And again, I can't help but warn you guys, be careful of anybody that's out there rubber stamping debt right now. All right, there's so much counterparty risk is building up in this system. And I don't care how good you think your proprietary algorithm is. There's no way somebody at checkout, when they say, do you want to buy now, pay later, Y or N? There's no way your algorithm is somehow doing a background check on that person based on what? The zip code of the Walmart that they're shopping in? Sorry, it just doesn't work that way. These people are just rubber stamping debt because they have no intention of holding on to it. They securitize it and they sell it to people's pensions in their 401ks. In other words, this debt is garbage and it's a lot of it's probably not going to be paid back, just like happened to Tricolor Auto Group yesterday. And Open Door taps a new CEO and names Keith Raboy as chairman, boosting the stock by 30%. Again, welcome to the bubble where the valuations don't matter. Open Door, the online real estate platform that's seen a surge of retail investor interest in recent months, said Wednesday that it's tapped former Shopify exec Kaz Najation as CEO and named co-founder Keith Raboy as chairman. The stock popped 30% in extended trading and is now up more than 15-fold since hitting its record low in June. Najation spent 6 years at Shopify and oversaw the Canadian e-commerce company's product division. In addition to serving as its COO, Open Door went public through a special purpose acquisition company, or a SPAC, in 2020. The company's business involves using technology to buy and sell homes, pocketing the gains. Guys, they flip houses. Okay, they've got a website and they've got an app that helps them flip houses, but at the end of the day, they flip houses. This is not a $6.5 billion enterprise. People who flip houses get wiped out when housing bubbles crash. Case in point, talk to anybody who used to flip houses in 2005, 2006. Stock was up 29% yesterday. It's up another. These numbers don't look right. Let's refresh this because the opening bell just rang. That's why. There we go. Stock is up 30.7%, trading at $7.66 on a new CEO. All right. A new CEO. It's almost like people are just buying stock based on any headline. It doesn't really matter what it is. I don't know why a new CEO suddenly makes this company worth 30% more. This guy must do amazing stuff. Meanwhile, we've got Erdoganomics is still a thing. Turkey defies rate bets with a larger than expected cut to 40.5%. Turkey is cutting interest rates. They delivered a sizable interest rate on Thursday with the central bank sticking to a faster pace and defying Wall Street expectations of a more significant slowdown. The Monetary Policy Committee slashed their one-week repo rate to 40.5%, down from 43%, more than investors had expected. Inflation in August came in above economist projections at 33%. Let's just stop right there, guys. They just cut interest rates by, 250 basis points, and their inflation rate is 33%. Cutting interest rates to fight inflation. That's a bold move, Cotton. We'll see if it plays out for them. Look at the Turkish lira. These are weekly snapshots going back to the year 2000. Erdoganomics, what wonderful things you have done. This is the chart of USD TRY, the number of lira it takes to make $1. Now, keep in mind, guys, this is the lira losing value against the dollar. And then think about how much the dollar has lost value against everything else over that same period. Well, good luck with your rate cuts, Turkey. All I can say is your people are being smothered by inflation and you just made things a whole heck of a lot worse. The great Keynesian experiment continues. And speaking of currencies crashing, the Indian rupee sinks to a record low as U.S. tariffs keep the outlook fragile. We're getting a little short on time here, guys. Let's just talk about this one real quick. India's exports are plunging, and exports is the source of dollars for the Indian economy. Now, they continue to import things, and they're paying for their imports with dollars that they're no longer earning via exports, which means Indian importers are having to sell rupees on the open market to buy the dollars in order to pay for their imports. And if they don't solve that problem soon, if they don't come up with a new source of dollars, then the Indian rupee is going to keep declining. Check this one out. Now, we're looking at daily snapshots of the Indian rupee, and this is going back to about the end of 2023. You can see here we had something of a double top pattern this year that started in February, and then we double topped back at the beginning of August. We have now broken through that level to an all-time high in USD INR. And keep in mind, an all-time high in this chart, that is an all-time low in the currency. And if we set this to, say, weekly candles, well, it starts to look an awful lot like that Turkish chart. Look, the Indians have some real problems. The trade war, it's not all like a one-sided U.S. victory. There's plenty of problems for the U.S. here. American farmers are really hurting because of the trade war. But this is a war of economic attrition, and the Indian currency is bleeding to death, and it's going to keep getting worse. If they don't cut a deal soon, we'll see what comes out of that. All right, last one, and we're going to talk about this one, guys. We have to talk about this at least a little bit every day because I think the average person is being robbed by Wall Street right now with the blessing of Washington, D.C. And so let's talk about this one in the Milwaukee Business Journal here. Adding private market assets to a traditional 60-40 portfolio could help with volatility. Let me just say, this title is 100% horse manure. This is a lie, all right? Private assets are the most volatile, illiquid things you could possibly buy. Now, the reason they're saying it could help with volatility is because the people who are trying to sell these private assets to you right now are lying about what it's worth, not changing their marks on the value of their companies. And they're saying, oh, you see, it's less volatile. It's only less volatile because you're not telling us what it's worth. It's kind of like when Christian Bale called up that lady who laughed at him at the bank in The Big Short and says, I want you to check the mark on my swaps. And they say, oh, the mark is unchanged. And he goes into this tirade. How could they be unchanged? Because they're lying about what it's worth. And they're not going to tell the truth until they get that garbage off their balance sheet. And that is the truth that this title is trying to hide from you. And who is saying this? Well, it turns out it's Apollo, one of the private equity firms that is desperately trying to unload this stuff. They're saying alternative assets like private equity and private credits are all real assets, the last of which includes private infrastructure and private real estate. They could play a key role. According to a study by Apollo Global Management, who's desperately seeking exit liquidity, replacing just 10 percentage points of a public market only 60-40 portfolio with private assets between January of 2008 and June of 2004 would have increased returns by a half a percentage point per year while reducing volatility as well. Oh, they're conveniently leaving out 2025 when everybody realized these things aren't worth what they're saying they're worth. And again, the only reason they're less volatile is because they never tell the truth about their values. Guys, this is sell side research. They're publishing this in the Milwaukee Business Journals because the people who desperately need to get this crap off their books and into your 401k are trying to convince you to buy it. And then once you've bought it, then they're going to be like, oh, crap, it turns out it wasn't worth anything near what we sold it to you for. So sorry. We're really sorry. Don't let it happen, guys. Know what you own. Don't let this stuff into your retirement accounts. And I just want to say thank you so much to Mr. Frank. Thank you, Frank. This is a big one. He gifted 50 Nobody Special Finance memberships. I don't think that's ever happened before. I think that's the biggest one we've ever gotten. So thank you, Frank, very much for supporting the channel. Welcome to our 50 new Melonheads. Appreciate that very much, Frank. And to you, 50 new Melonheads, be sure and say thank you to Frank. And also be sure and use that super chat. You guys, once a month, you get a free super chat with that membership. And if you use that, you can put your questions in there. I will read and respond on the air. Thank you so much, Frank, for the generosity. I appreciate that very much. Steve Canyon says, never forget and never again. Thank you very much, Steve. That's right, guys. I mean, it's September 11th. It's 9/11. And it kind of sucks on a day like today that we got to lead off the way we did in this show. I really wish this kind of stuff didn't happen. All I can say is there's still time to stop it, guys. It doesn't have to be this way. We don't have to be shooting at each other over stupid political arguments. And if you're watching TV and if somebody comes on and they try to make excuses for murder, oh, well, he offended the alphabet people or he said something which a certain segment of the population may interpret as insensitive. Turn it off. They're trying to make excuses for murder. Turn that shit off. You shouldn't be listening to those people. They're trying to dehumanize a murder victim in order to lessen the crime, which would only make it more likely to happen again. Turn that crap off. And likewise, when you hear people telling you to go out and kill somebody else in retaliation for that, turn that shit off. Just don't listen. Unplug. Touch grass. Hug your kids. Just a thought. Thank you very much, Steve Canyon, for supporting the channel, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Appreciate that very much. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm, should you feel so inclined. Thank you also to all my magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube and Patreon for supporting the channel. Appreciate that very much, guys. Links down below, should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. And everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.